Oh, yeah, we're going back to the 70s here because our next guest, author Josh Karp, you know him from books like A Futile and Stupid Gesture and Orson Welles' Last Movie. He's also working on a number of projects, including an encyclopedia of the 1970s, which gives us a great chance to talk 70s stuff with our friend Josh Karp. Josh, good to have you with us. How are you?
Good, Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, given, you know, global pandemic, attempts to overthrow democracy. Other than that, I'm awesome.
Yeah, the little stuff. Sure. I got this.
We wanted to have more of a conversation with you about one of the many projects you're working on, an encyclopedia of the 70s. And I realize we covered a lot of ground last time, but we left out maybe one of the great cultural touchstones of that decade. And that is, to me, Battle of the Network Stars.
Oh, that is like the entire decade right there in one weird annual pseudo sporting event between celebrities. That was honestly like possibly my favorite thing. You know, I look forward to that like the Super Bowl, and I look forward to the Super Bowl as a kid, but really nothing was as good as Battle of the Network Stars.
Yeah, and part of it was to see, you know, things that you might not see anywhere else, you know, like Ed Asner in shorts. But then, you know, I don't know how old I was, I'm a teenager. And so, you know, to see anything that involved attractive actresses in swimsuits as a burgeoning teenager wondering what life was all about, that was fascinating, too.
Catherine Bach in a dunk tank.
Yes.
Daisy Duke and Linda Carter. Those were both formative experiences for me as a young man. And this is how messed up I am. I actually have and I don't know that they were captains every year, but I have a very vivid recollection of the three captains for each network. So, you know, you had ABC, NBC, and CBS when people cared about networks. And it was Telly Savalas, Gabe Kaplan, and Robert Conrad.
Robert Conrad, yes. Who, even though I was a CBS guy, I don't know why, but I was pulling for CBS, but I loved Robert Conrad. Well, going back to the Wild Wild West days.
Right. It was, I mean, it was literally, there is nothing weirder to me than looking back. Telly Savalas in like a red, you know, zip up sweatsuit with no shirt under it, which was just fantastic. And just the whole, all the weirdness. I remember listening to Howard Cosell. I mean, first of all, one of the great things is one year, and I don't know which year it was, the three people calling it were Cosell, Bruce Jenner, and OJ.
Oh, my word. Wow.
Like, I mean, talk about a view. If only we knew, right?
Right.
Like, back when those guys were like the two most iconic American males. You know, like, what could go wrong?
Yeah, yeah. If you can only see the future. My.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It amazes me that I actually had a rooting interest, but, you know, that's where we were in the 70s.
Right. Oh, yeah, I totally cared deeply about it, right? And I remember listening to Howard Cosell give a lengthy description of what kind of great athlete Scott Baio could have been had he not become an actor. As he was quarterbacking a touch football game at the age of like 16, you know, throwing passes, you know, to the guy who played Reuben Kincaid or something, you know, and you're just Dave Madden, and you're just like, you're like, really? Even then, even at the age of 10, I was like, I don't think Scott Baio is that good an athlete. He's not getting. He said something about. I can't remember. He mentioned something about how he could have played football at UCLA or something. And I was like, oh, come on. Really, Howard? Right. But no, that was the best. I mean, and it was so much better. You know, I mean, you think about it, it's kind of like a weird reality television event, right? Because it was, you know, but it was like celebrities in their prime competing, you know, in a tug of war. Remember, there was that incredibly important tug of war, you know, event, and there was an obstacle course. You know, watching Grant Goodeve run an obstacle course. Right. Like, it was so incredibly
thinking
weird.
To yourself, man, that Gary Sandy is quite the athlete, isn't he?
Yeah. Right, exactly. Right. there was, and I can't remember, I believe there was a, you know, speaking of Ed Asner, there was a swimming relay that Ed Asner anchored. He was like bringing it home for CBS. It was so weird. I mean, you couldn't make it. That was the great thing about the 70s, is it was weird without trying. You know, now, you know, you have stuff that, you know, I mean, you watch, you know, those, you know, the Real Housewives or, you know, or the Kardashians when they're still on. And that stuff's all contrived. This was just weird. There was no, you know, nothing else, you know, to to it. It was just exceptionally weird, and it was totally part of mainstream part of the culture.
We're talking with Josh Karp here on Downtown. I was thinking about movies, and of course, it's the 70s acclaimed as a decade of great films and wonderful directors, from The Godfather and so many others along the way. And I was trying to think, is there a movie from that decade, Josh, that was acclaimed at the time that people loved that, you know, now 40, 45 years down the road, we look at and say, well, maybe it wasn't all that good.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I'm trying to think, you know, I think to me, it's more stuff that people, I'm sure there were movies like that, though. Whenever I think of a movie, and this is an unpopular opinion, that people thought was great in its time, that I thought was awful in its time and remains awful to me, is Titanic. I'm always like,
oh, I hate Titanic.
Oh, Titanic. I'm like, that's like, you know, that's the worst kind of movie, and everybody thinks it's genius. But in the 70s, I think there were movies that were not looked on as great, but that I think were really, you know, terrific movies. And there were so many movies that, you know, a movie like, honestly, North Dallas 40, which is like one movie I love, which, you know, people were kind of like, wow, that's a weird, you know, football movie with Nick Nolte. But that was a terrific movie that nobody, you know, I think was really in love with.
Well, I remember as a kid in the 70s thinking, oh, my God, the Poseidon Adventure. What a silly, silly movie. Well, it happened to be on the other night.
Uh-huh.
And I was glued to it because I couldn't remember who lived and died at the end. And there I was, you know, pulling like crazy for Ernest Borgnine. And I thought, this, is it better than I remember? Or have I become the target audience for this just by aging?
The disaster movies were so great because they were filled with like Oscar winners. Like I think Jimmy Stewart was on one of the airplanes in one of the, you know, airport movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was like, I think he was on the flight that actually went down in the Bermuda Triangle, if I'm not mistaken, which is, you know, Jimmy Stewart, like really, you know, and what, the Towering Inferno had both Steve McQueen and Paul Newman in it.
Right.
You know, that's one of the things that I just love about that decade is that, you know, somebody who, you know, people who are big will do a crap movie now, but they won't do something that, you know, where they aren't doing it like as a folly, you know, where it's like, hey, look at me, I'm George Clooney, I'm making this, you know, I'm making a cameo in this stupid movie. Then it was like, you know, somebody like Paul Newman, who's, you know, the biggest movie star in the world, is like, yeah, sure, I'll be in the Towering Inferno. You know, why not? You know, why wouldn't I be in Earthquake? You know, or some, you know, film like that. So that was kind of great. I mean, I think that everybody's willingness to participate in kind of schlock culture was one of my favorite things about that time.
Where do you come down on Mel Brooks? Because for my money, the two funniest movies of the decade were in the order changes from year to year with me, but Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein.
Oh, I love Mel Brooks. I mean, what I love about Mel Brooks, first of all, is the relentlessness of his humor.
Oh, yes.
He's somebody who you can just tell if you're not if you were in a room with him and he felt the need to make you laugh, which I imagine he would continually feel the need to do anytime he was around people, he just wouldn't stop. And he would not, you know, would not stop until you were absolutely dying. I always think about, my dad was a huge Mel Brooks fan. And, I mean, I loved Blazing Saddles. I loved, what's it called? I loved, Young Frankenstein, but I always think about the movie High Anxiety.
Oh God. Yes.
Which was a parody of Hitchcock movies, but had one of the, having grown up Jewish, had one of the all-time great Jewish jokes ever in it, which is when he's addressing, he's a therapist, and he's addressing a therapist convention in San Francisco, and he says, and he's standing in front of posters of Freud, Jung, and Dr. Joyce Brothers, which I always love. And he said, he goes, these three great geniuses, these forebears, he said, these people who were trailblazers, he said, have made for us a good living. And I always, that is like, to be, as a Jewish person, that is like one of the best Jewish jokes ever. Just, that would be his take, would be, they've made a good, we make a good living, we're comfortable. So,
well, I love the scene where he sings, "High Anxiety." That's
right.
Just brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember more of the lyrics than I should. Yeah, that's great. And there's so much stuff in those movies. I mean, and it's funny, my kids, I have, teenagers down to a 12-year-old. I'm like, it's funny because those movies really hold up. They love Blazing Saddles, though they don't get references to, everybody in town being named Howard Johnson, which is a hard one to explain. That's, that's like explaining, life before radio or something to them. So
now, I also loved Woody Allen movies. For years, Annie Hall was one of my favorites. And I still watch if they come on, but I don't feel good about it.
Yeah, that's really hard. I mean, because I love especially his movies from that era. And just how, how smart they were and how ridiculous they were. I always, speaking of Howard Cosell, I remember
Bananas, yes.
Yeah, when he's calling an execution, right? As somebody's like they're about to, or an assassination. And
then does play by play for the wedding night as well.
Right. And I remember that Woody Allen gives his character the best name in any Woody Allen movie, which is the main character's name, Fielding Mellish, which I don't even know. That's like, I would retire if I just came up with that name for a movie. I'd be like, that's the peak. And I just remember Cosell's voice with Woody Allen running around a corner and, in the public square lane, and he goes, and here comes Mellish. And also, I think we can all relate to the, in current times, to the guy who is the, what's it called? The revolutionary leader who takes over San Marcos.
Yes.
And when he says, they all follow out of the revolution and everybody's a big part of it. But he says, the first new law, of San Marcos is everybody must change their underwear four times a day. And they must wear it on the outside so that we can check. And in the Trump era, I think that is an extremely relatable moment. That seemed really ridiculous at the time.
I want to bring it to the present day for just a moment, because you've written so much and you know Orson Welles so very well. Have you had a chance to watch Mank yet?
I watched the first 30 minutes of it, and I need to watch the rest. I don't know, exactly. I mean, I know from everybody's kind of uproar and, hue and cry about, the Welles stuff in the film. What's funny is people are upset, obviously, that the film seems to give Mankiewicz. Have you watched the entire thing yet?
I have, and it was, that bothered me a little bit. At the same time, it's a beautiful movie, and the guy playing Welles, man, you swear to God it's Orson Welles. He's great.
He's terrific.
But I also had trouble with a 61-year-old playing 43-year-old Mank, so there were issues with it, yes.
Right. I mean, I was okay with what I saw. And I honestly, I've always, while I know that, Welles and Mankiewicz were certainly extremely, collaborative on the script, and, really Mankiewicz kind of created, as far as I recall, the outline and the basic script, and Welles really turned it into a masterpiece, both before production and during production. And in fact, Alex Roth from the New Yorker, who's a big well fanatic, posted a bunch of stuff on Twitter today of actual notes of that Wells had put on the script, which was really, you know, really interesting. But I think, you know, aside from that, you know, the truth is, I think filmmakers, you know, when you make a movie, even if it's based on historical fact, you know, you have a right. You know, I mean, if I'm going to accept Quentin Tarantino, you know, having, you know, having Brad Pitt kill, you know, Charles Manson or whatever happened in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, or killing Hitler, you know, I guess I can certainly accept that David Fincher is going to, you know, mess with the facts a little bit. I think that's what people, that's what, you know, that's what you need to do. You need to make the story, you know, you need to do what you need to do without being ridiculous to make the changes that reflect the story you want to tell. You know, the idea is always to be kind of accurate, but not necessarily factual.
Josh Karp with us here on Downtown. All right, back to the 70s. And at the time, guys, I was working on the radio at the time as a very young guy when disco came to prominence, and I did not like it at the time. I despised disco. And again, I don't know what's happened to me. I've gotten weak as the years have gone by. Now I'll hear some of those songs, and not all of them, but you know, like some of the Bee Gees songs, some of the Saturday Night Fever stuff I'll hear and say, well, that's not so bad in retrospect. How do you feel about that era of music, especially the latter half of the decade?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, since I live in the town where they had disco demolition night.
Right,
you know,
right. At Steve Dahl.
White Sox game. Yeah. So, and that was also, you know, I mean, I was, you know, Steve Dahl was it here. So that was a huge event for anybody who was kind of coming of age at the time. What's funny is I don't know that I've, you know, I don't mind disco music the way I used to. I find myself liking things. And I wish I was liking them ironically. I don't know why I'm liking them. I can't figure out the reason, but things that, like, I would have turned off in a heartbeat any time up until 8 years ago, which is stuff like Gordon Lightfoot, which I always made me, you know, want to go drown myself in the bathtub, you know, and I will literally be like, the Edmund Fitzgerald. And I don't know if it's nostalgia or what it is. I mean, I draw the line at Seasons in the Sun. That was...
Oof, yeah. And we've had Terry Jacks on the show, and he's an awfully nice man, but I still can't listen. The one I heard the other day, and yes, I'm... Because, you know, you're always drawn to the music from when you were young and instant memories. But I heard a song, and I don't know if you remember, I think his name was David Geddes. It was, for my money, one of the worst songs of that decade, a song called Run, Joey, Run.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that well. I mean, what's weird is it, all those songs are like the Kennedy assassination for me. I can, like, remember where I was when I heard them on several different occasions. Like, I remember what friend's living room I was in hearing Run, Joey, Run. You know, it's I don't know why those songs that I hated so much left such an impression on me. But, yeah, I remember Run, Joey, Run. Extremely well. And I actually did they make some kind of weird TV show about a dog called Run, Joey, Run at some point in the 70s? I feel like there was.
I'm sure they must have. It sounds...
Yeah, I know I do, because I think I remember seeing a commercial for it when Hank Aaron hit his 715th home run. I remember it had come right after a Run, Joey, Run, I believe, commercial. So that was, I'll have to check my...
Did you find something, Carrie?
Yes, there was a show called Run, Joe, Run, a Saturday morning television program on NBC for two seasons. It got two seasons out of it, apparently.
And was there a dog involved?
Yes. Joe is a German Shepherd.
Yes!
Wow.
In the canine corps. There's a trailer for it on YouTube, by the way. Run, Joe, Run's dash season one, and it's the... Well, I actually think it's the opening sequence or something to it.
Oh, wow. I'm that's where I'm going right after I get off.
It looks like a great piece of art.
Wow, I have forgotten all about that. Thank you for pulling that one out.
Thank you for making me feel like I haven't lost my mind.
Oh, so man, I could do this every day.
So there we go. Hank Aaron and Run, Joe, Run. So, yeah, there we go.
That's impressive work there. All right, well, listen, you know, that makes me think that we've got to do another chapter of this conversation and chat about some of those Saturday morning kid shows, including, of course, H.R. Puffin stuff and others, the next time we get together.
I would love to.
All right, Josh.
Anytime to talk about H.R. Puffin stuff is good for me.
Always great. So much fun, Josh. We appreciate it, as always. And we'll do it again before too long, perhaps in the new year.
Thank you. I would love that. Have a great holiday.
Josh Karp with us on Downtown. Always a blast when Josh visits.